This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education, classes in session. And man, Johnny and Jess, class is truly in session today because we have got a guest that for a lot of us who have been in education, our acquaintances or our connections to our guest have, you know, come through in so many different ways and so many different uses that we were able to think about this. Johnny and Jess, I know typically I check in with you guys, how you're doing and things like that. Give me the thumbs up. I know you're doing great because I got a guest like this has a long introduction, so I got to have some time. He's a renowned psychologist and educator whose theory of multiple intelligences revolutionized how we understand human potential. He's the author of Frames of Mind, a groundbreaking book that inspired new approaches to teaching and learning in schools, curricula, and homes around the world. He is also the author of A Synthesizing Mind, where he reflects on his intellectual journey and the critical importance of developing the ability to connect ideas across disciplines. He's also got two new volumes coming up. We'll let him promote that. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Howard Gardner. Dr. Gardner, how are you?
Thank you. Thanks for that nice introduction. And yes, as people who can see me will know, and maybe people who can hear me, I'm not young anymore. And so as I entered my ninth decade, I put out two collections of my writings. One is called The Essential Howard Gardner on Mind, and the other is called The Essential Howard Gardner on Education. And since, as you said, my theory of multiple intelligences is what's best known, if you're particularly interested in the educational implications, Essential Gardner on Education is the one to look at. If you're more interested in how it relates to psychology and to other disciplines, to creativity, leadership, good work, then the Essential Howard Gardner in Mind is the one. But if you want to be really smart, you should get both of them.
Get them both. And we'll make sure to, listening in the podcast, we'll have links so that you're able to get those books. And again, theory of multiple intelligences, you know, this is where I think most people, Howard, are going to say, oh, yeah, I definitely heard of that. I was wondering, though, too, if you know, again, we have you here, we have the opportunity, just a little bit of going back and kind of help us grasp and the listener to understand, you know, multiple intelligences. And I'll kind of phrase it this way. As a child in the early 70s, I got, quote, called for the potential that I might be gifted. And at that time, the standardized number two bubble test came back and said, oh, no. Sorry, Tim, wrong person. You're definitely not gifted. And thinking about that and wondering, it's like we've come a long way saying, in fact, even that word gifted, and I'm phrasing that, Howard, because I think a lot of listeners would be like, oh, we're talking about gifted education. But for me, when the multiple intelligence came forward, it was really that opportunity to say, hey, guess what? There are lots of ways to be gifted. And I was wondering if you can kind of give us a kind of retro, where did this come from? I mean, what prompted you to even synthesize this idea?
Sure. As a young psychologist, I was very interested in the arts because I have a background in the arts. And I was kind of intrigued that the psychologists never looked at the arts. They looked mostly at sciences or more standard parts of the academics world. And I said that this is a real deficit. Then my colleagues and I were lucky enough to get a huge grant to study what was known about the human mind toward the end of the 20th century. And I was able to canvass many literatures, to interview many people, to travel to many parts of the world. And I realized that the Western notion of smart is much too limited. And because I'd been studying the brain, I realized that each part of the brain, so to speak, processes a different kind of information. If I'd written a book called Seven Talents or Seven Gifts, you wouldn't be talking to me today. But I decided to call it The Theory of Multiple Intelligences And this right away mobilized the entire psychology profession to be against me because they have such a vested interest in the IQ test, which is a good way to predict if you have 15 minutes, who's going to do better in second grade or worse. But once you start to think about all the abilities we need in the world to succeed in various ways, to deal with other people, to be able to use our bodies well, to be able to find our way around space, to be able to master various kinds of trades and arts and so on, the notion of a single intelligence is really very flawed. So when I published a book called Frames of Mind, The Theory of Multiple Intelligences, I was shocked by how quickly educators said, you know, we've already known this, but nobody has given us a framework in which to describe what it is that we see in young children. Some are very good with language. Some are very good with mathematics. Some are very good with music. Some are very good with spatial orientation. Some are very good with intricate uses of their bodies. Some really understand other people well. Some don't understand other people, but understand themselves well. Others are very good at making distinctions in nature between one animal and another, one plant and another. Gardner, this guy, has written 400 pages with thousands of footnotes to really legitimize each of these as forms of intelligence. And it has really had huge effects in the world of education, initially in this country, then more in Latin America and East Asia. Now, 40 years later, what they call the Belt and Road countries, places like Thailand, Indonesia, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, people are learning about the theory. And what I try to do is to be helpful, but not to overpromise, because of course, even if you believe there are lots of different intelligences, that doesn't tell you how to change your school. And I'm sure we will talk about that.
Yeah. Johnny.
Well, yeah, this is a great conversation, especially for our listeners. You know, we're always talking, Howard, about teaching and about most of us are teachers. Tim and I both teach teachers. And so, as you know, your work has had a tremendous impact and influence on learning to be a teacher. And, you know, so I'm just thinking for our listeners, as we have you here and you just laid out multiple intelligences and sort of how it's come to be and what it is, but talk to us a little bit about, from your perspective, how it helps us be better teachers.
After looking at many, many different experiments with multiple intelligences all around the world, I've come up with two terms which I think are helpful. One is individuation and the other is pluralization. Individuation is find out as much about each learner as you can and try to present materials in ways that the learner can enter into them, begin to grapple with them, understand them, ask questions, and so on. Now, if you say, well, I've got 30 kids in a class or 50 kids in a class, I can't individuate, it's obviously more difficult. Passing knowledge from one grade to the other, from one teacher to the other, is helpful. But what has revolutionized, of course, is new kinds of technology. Because there's no reason why we can't teach geometry in 20 different ways online. And now with artificial intelligence, we could create a new one just for Johnny or just for Tim, just for Jess. So individuation is much, much more possible in the 21st century than it was, except when Alexander the Great was tutored by Aristotle. That was individuation, but Macedonia had a lot of material to work with in individuation. Pluralization is, I think, undervalued. If we try to teach everything in the world, we would clearly fail. So I think in every topic, in every interdisciplinary area, we have to say, what's the most important ideas? If it's biology, what's evolution about? What's quantum mechanics about? What's gravity about? But there's no reason that you have to teach it in just one way. And if I said to you, Tim, all right, I know we're talking about gravity, but can you explain it to me another way? Can you show it to me? Can you enact it? Can we take two things and drop them from a high? If you can only teach it in one way, you're not a good teacher. Mm. So it's the combination of knowing as much about the child as possible so you can teach him or her in a way that makes sense to that child. But it's the same understanding your topic, your concept deeply enough. So if one way of presenting it doesn't work, another way would be. And I think people who understand that aspect of multiple intelligences will be better teachers. Of course, teachers should talk to one another. I was teaching piano when I was a kid. I taught K through two when I was in graduate school. And of course, I've taught college and graduate students ever since. And the more you teach and find something doesn't work, the more important is to talk to colleagues, try something new out and see whether that works better. It doesn't always work better, but at least it helps you understand it better. And that puts you in a better position when kid says, well, I got this far when we were doing the quadratic equation, but I really got stuck here. Can you help me? You don't just say, well, if you didn't get it this way, I can't help you.
Howard, that's awesome, man. We always talk about it with our teachers, that teachers learn the most when we're talking to each other about our students and how they learn differently and the ways that we can differentiate, or like you're saying, pay attention to individuation and pluralization. And I just got to thank you, because your theory of multiple intelligences helped me as a teacher, but also helps so many teachers make sense of that. What might that look like? How can we begin to think about the different ways that we might need to explain something, so we can practice that ahead, so that we have those skills in our pocket as those teachable moments, we call them, come up. So really want to thank you and appreciate that explanation, and love this focus on individuation and pluralization.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I were to rewrite the book today, it would clearly take advantage of AI and all the different kinds of platforms that exist now. But that's a job for somebody half my age to do, but I can root for them.
You can root for them. And Howard, actually too, we do quite a bit of talking about AI. Johnny and I have a little running kind of feud, although we're getting closer and closer to being on the pretty close to the same page. I want to talk a little bit about that, but I want to ask this question, because you talk about the theory and the implications, and kind of, you know, that challenge from the very beginning to this one way of, quote, knowing, or one way of measuring. And, you know, I said, like you said, towards the end of the 90s, I remember that push and kind of going forward and going like, wow, this is great. We're finally going to acknowledge individuals, their skills, their unique gifts. And boy, the pushback on that idea continues to be a theme, particularly in American public education, and thinking about No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top. All of that to me was kind of going, we're not going to go with multiple intelligences in ways. We're not going to go with individuation. We're not going to go with pluralization. We've got individuals that we need to measure, because their parents need to know, society needs to know. And I just wonder how you kind of looking at the kind of sociopolitical effects of policies that hit particularly public education in America, how do you see those kind of trends of what's in and what's out?
Well, I was remarking to my wife that Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, said the American public needs a new plaything in education every 10 to 15 years, and it doesn't really matter what it is. And I think MI had its day. Looking at the list of the people who are most contacted now, I think Angela Duckworth with Grit and Carol Dweck with Mental Set, they've sort of followed through in the multiple intelligence trial. But my serious answer to your question is, you know, we can't ignore the signals from the broader society, but it doesn't tell us how to teach, and it doesn't tell us how to deal with individual kids. And the more sophisticated the teacher is, or the school is, or the headmaster is, or the principal is, the more flexible they'll be in helping achieve those educational priorities, which the state or the country states are important. But as somebody who knows a lot about education around the world, the best performing schools are in Finland and in Singapore. There are not two countries that are more different from one another than Finland and Singapore. But in each case, they take teaching seriously. And as long as the students end up performing well, the teachers are given a lot of latitude. As we know, alas, half the people who enter in the classroom in America leave after 5 years, because there isn't a good progress from being a rookie to being a good amateur to being a professional, and then becoming a head teacher, a phrase which is used in most other societies. So I think the answer to your question, Tim, is more of it's more a question about sociology than it is a question about pedagogy. And if we had the same respect for teachers and for education that countries as different as Finland and Singapore had, and actually England is doing better in the last 10 or 15 years on the kinds of measures we're talking about, you know, the TIMSS and other international comparisons. And I think it's because they have a background of inspectors who come around to schools, and they don't just say, show us your test scores. They go into classes and they watch how teachers perform. So this is, I wish it were an educational and psychological question, but it's really a political and sociological question.
Yeah, for sure, Johnny, because, right, I mean, that's, we just had a guest on, Ira Sokol, his new book, Designed to Fail, A History of Education in America. And boy, Ira really kind of lays this out and says, you know, for all of those individuals that found schooling challenging, the reality was is that because the social aspects, as you point out, the political aspects of schooling were never, at least from Ira's point of view, designed to encourage, entice, and develop learners as much as it was to kind of categorize, compartmentalize, and sort kids. And we know that, and we see that continue to this day. What are the, you know, the aims and purposes of education in any society? And I'm so happy to hear you again talk about Finland and Singapore, because in putting those together like that, because as you pointed out, very different, but that the common thread, and this is where I think our listeners are going to love this, is treating teachers as those professionals who have that ability to really jump in and have a sense where in America we've said, you know, people say we have a teacher shortage. I say, no, we have a teacher exodus. We have a problem with keeping our best teachers, you know, and if you're one of those great best teachers out there, 608-557-8577. That's the Busted Pencils mailbag line. You know, we want to hear from you. If you have a question too, we'll get it to Howard, 608-557-8577. So I don't know. It was just me. I guess I kind of went on a little bit of a ramble there, Howard. But, you know, we just keep pushing this. And to recognize that there are places where people are doing really great work. And the idea is, what is it that stops, you know, and we're going to talk more very specifically, America from replicating things that work other places?
I mean, that's, I think, what is going to call for another program. But let me say something which is very serious and will make many people uncomfortable. Artificial intelligence is going to explode how education is carried out around the world. We're in touch with Chinese curricular developers. They want to put everything in AI. Now, from a social point of view, we might say, is this a good thing? That's a topic for another podcast. But when we have the capacity to individuate through ChatGPT and other large language instruments as much as possible for every child, and when, in addition, if one way of teaching doesn't work, we can just use another way, this is going to explode the way education is done everywhere. And I borrowed a word from a company which we all know, Meta, not because I have any particular relationship to Meta, but Meta is, it's a Greek word which means you have to look at things from a more distant level. And I think teachers are going to be spending much less time worrying about whether somebody knows all the things that happened in the American Revolution or the Civil War, because that's instantly available. And they're going to spend much more time saying, does this child understand history, what it means to make a claim, and how to take it seriously? And when there's a debate about, let's say, Reconstruction, how to evaluate which point of view is better? Or when some people say Einstein explained everything, and people say, no, quantum mechanics did it much better, and then somebody else says super string. We don't have to go into those details anymore, but we have to be able to say, how do we evaluate this whole approach? And this is where, since you mentioned it, my book on the synthesizing mind, which is a personal memoir, is very relevant. I think that we're going to have be spending much less time in the weeds and much more time trying to put stuff together. And there's no reason to think that people in Finland or Singapore are any better at doing that in the United States or England or Brazil. AI is making a new ball game for education around the world. And, you know, if I were a teacher nowadays, I'd be somewhat nervous about that. But on the other hand, if you really believe in the calling of a teacher, you can't ignore anything, whether it's the pencil or the book or the typewriter or the movie camera or the smart device. You have to be able to know how to use them. And we're not going to talk about social media, but social media are not going to disappear. Mm-hmm. The question for every educator is how to use them as positively as possible and not to have them ruin kids either cognitively or emotionally or in terms of their spirits.
Mm. Oh, I love that. And before we wrap up, Howard, though, I think this connects to what you're talking about. And I really love this perspective that you're providing and the synthesizing mind. But you talk about the Good Project.
Sure.
Can you give our listener a little intro to the Good Project before we depart with you?
Absolutely. It's great to develop intelligence or intelligences, but every intelligence can be used benignly or malignantly. Goebbels, the propagandist for Hitler, used language very well to create hatred. Goethe, the German writer, wrote great novels and poetry. Similarly, you can pick your political figures. Some use language in ways to bring out the best in people, and some just bring out the destruction. So we've been working for over 30 years in what you call the Good Project. It's about what does it mean to be a good worker and a good citizen. That's not the same thing. A worker is what do you do to put food on the table. Citizen is what does it mean to be a member of a society where you have some vote. And we believe there are three components. They all begin with letter E: excellence, engagement, and ethics. Excellent means whether you're doing teaching or being a citizen, you got to know your stuff. Engagement is you got to care. And now it's not so easy to care. Many of my friends are not listening to the news anymore. I understand why, but that you're not caring if you don't know what's going on. What the Good Project focuses on ethics, because we don't need ethics to study the golden rule. Everybody knows that you shouldn't mistreat people because you'll be mistreated. But ethics is what do you do when there's a situation that's more complicated? Mm-hmm. How do you, we talk about the D's. You have to define the dilemma, discuss, debate, decide, and debrief. Debrief means we may not have gotten it right. You and I may have come up with a way of using AI, which sounds great, but it sucks. Can we do a better job? Can we do a better job next time? So I encourage people, particularly those who know about MI, multiple intelligences, to go to thegoodproject.org. And I may regret this, but I do answer every serious communication that I get, because as somebody who's too old to travel around and to begin new projects, I try at least to be helpful to people who sincerely reach out, including Johnny and Tim and Jess.
Wow. Howard, thank you so much for that. And man, what a great interview. We could continue going on and on and on. If you are loving this conversation too, I just want to remind you, there is the Busted Pencils mailbag. We would love to hear from you. The number, of course, is 608-557-8577. You can leave us a voicemail. You can text us, whatever it takes. Let us know what you're thinking. And again, questions for Howard, we will make sure that we get them to him. And Howard, for everything Howard Gardner, getting books, Amazon?
Sure. Or go to my website, howardgardner.com. And even though I may not know what's there, all the answers are there.
Well, Howard, thank you so much. As we say, thanks for busting pencils.
Thank you very much. This was lots of fun. And I'm glad to talk to teachers because often I'm talking to other groups. But basically, ever since I was 5 years old, I wanted to be a teacher. And to the extent I can still engage in educating, that makes me happy.
And now for your moment of zen. Objectivity is not desirable because if we want to have an effect on the world, we need to emphasize those things which will make students more active citizens and more moral people.
Hey, listeners, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils, Educated Educators Talking Education. Remember, you can catch our podcast drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Catch us live every Saturday on all the civic media networks. And keep busting pencils.